All the leaves are green.
All the leaves are green.
And the sky's not gray.
And the sky's not gray.
Bring the preacher and the
rice.
It's our wedding day.
We would just be dreaming
if we weren't in L.A.
If we weren't in L.A.
California gay men. Stopped into a church and said, now we are gay.
Yeah, we got down on our
knees
and we began to pray.
That way.
Since we both are wedding planners,
what's the odds?
We planned it right away.
Planned it right away.
California gay
California
men.
Gay men.
Our fairy tales today. Do you promise to love, honor, and be fabulous to each other? Do you promise to share the PT Cruiser and never let your abs lose definition? And do both of you promise that your divorce from Liza Minnelli is final? Then I am pleased to announce you as man and governor of New Jersey. California gay man!
California gay man!
We'll have our wedding day
walking down the aisle
to YMCA.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining this program, we're listening to a debate. Is reducing carbon emissions worth the cost? You can hear this program at 96.5 FM, or you can go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Chicago Climate Exchange. This is a voluntary group of now over 400 businesses, my company is a member, who have pledged to cut their carbon. They have reduced carbon collectively 8%. There's no law that says they have to. You don't need taxes. You don't need draconian regulation. We simply need to be smart about how we use energy. California, AB 32, new study out from the University of California, fully implementing the Republican Governor Schwarzenegger's cap on carbon and trading regime, would deliver to California $78 billion in increased state gross product. So let's bring it home. Four Times Square down the road, looks like a normal building, costs the same to build, uses half the energy, gets its energy from photovoltaics in the skin of the building and a fuel cell in the basement. This building can never be turned off. So in the 2003 Northeast blackout, remember that? People came from blocks around to camp out underneath it. Genuine homeland security. If we want security, if we want an economy, we will invest in energy efficiency and renewable energy because it's what gives us the greatest rate of return.
Hunter Levins, time is up. Thank you. Thank you, Hunter Levins. So where we are in the debate, the time period of uninterrupted speaking is over. We're going to move into the portion of the evening now where the debaters debate one another. And as you recall, when you came in this evening, we polled you about your view on the motion, and we will poll you again after the debate, but I have the results that have come in now. Our motion is major reductions in carbon emissions are not worth the money. In support of this motion, 16%. Against the motion, 49%, and that leaves 35% undecided. So I'd like to now come to your questions, and what I'm going to do in the beginning is maybe collect two or three. I see down right down front, third row.
Well, many environmental impacts, such as carbon emissions, are merely treated as externalities in terms of economic costs. Al Gore, however, suggests that these carbon emissions are treated as total economic costs. How greatly would American industries be affected if these environmental impacts were treated as costs rather than externalities.
And Bjorn, would you like to take that last question?
Yeah, and clearly I think any economist would say that we need to actually make sure that the externality, the thing that you don't pay for, that you actually end up paying for it. But you also have to have a realistic sense of it, and that's of course where we need to talk not just about what works in particular companies, but what actually works for economy. If you look at across all the different studies, and Professor Richard Tall has done so, and it's latest and the only global survey of all the costs of what is an extra ton of CO2 causing of damage in the world, the answer is that's about $7 per ton of CO2. That translates pretty much into 6 cents per gallon of gasoline. So yes, we should have a carbon tax. That's not what actually going to do anything majorly for or against our emissions.
Oliver Tickell, what did you hear in that answer?
Well, I think that this whole question that of paying for externalities associated with carbon emissions is absolutely crucial. And then you get to the point of if people do pay for externalities in the form perhaps of a carbon tax or an auction price of carbon permits under a cap and trade system, what then happens to those funds that are raised? Clearly there are two ways to go. There is adaptation, there is mitigation, but the greatest of these is mitigation, because the best way that we can serve the victims and potential victims of climate change is by making sure that it does not happen.
Philip Starr, what's this head shake?
You're never going to stop climate change. Can we just kill one thing off? Climate will change without us or with us, and that's where Bjorn is right. Bjorn is right, because always it's going to have to aid adaptation. If in any way we impoverish ourselves so we cannot help the developing world, that would indeed be a moral mistake of mammoth proportions.
Whoa, nobody's talking about impoverishing ourselves. We are talking about the generation of wealth through smart investments. Now, your question of who's going to spend the money... Most of the people that are proposed to spend the money, whether it be the UN or the U.S. government or anybody's government, I think they're going to spend it badly. How about we set incentives to enable the business community to do what it is already doing, which is decarbonizing, because it's in their economic interest?
Hunter, I love the illusionist of saying, oh, this is going to be free. We are going to make money off of this. I love the fact that you want to reintroduce into the American public the idea of a profit-maximizing CEO. I think that's a good idea. But honestly, I think you already have that. The point is, how are we going to get beyond that? And that is going to be costly. And Europe has shown the way.
But Bjorn, costly, I mean, the question went to the matter of a 2% of world GNP.
Yeah.
That is enormously costly.
Yeah, and that is what the UN is telling us that the cost is probably going to be. I mean, you can have a discussion about, is it going to be 1%? Is it going to be 3%? But it's definitely going to be hugely costly. And simply making these stories that some companies can make money, hey, great. And presumably, we don't have to do anything to make them make money. But the real question is,
please,
where are we going to get the rest of the cuts?
One of the absolute key things here is actually to address the very agenda that you put forward of huge spending into research and development for renewable technology. And the strange thing is that you put that forward as if it was some kind of an alternative to cutting carbon, when in fact it's a very important aspect of how you set about cutting carbon emissions. Where you're wrong with that, it is a necessary part but not sufficient, because there are two components. There's research and development, and then there is making sure that it happens on a sufficiently large scale to get the economies of mass production, which are real. And we know in the case of solar PV that the cost falls 20% for every doubling of production. We see in the New York Times today that the cost to Americans of installing solar PV is half of what it used to be as a result, in part, of these kind of costs.
Oliver, we're not disagreeing with you on that.
This is the situation that we need to bring about. And as the costs come down through research, through development, through mass production, through large-scale deployment, we are bringing costs down and we are cutting carbon emissions.
Nobody in this panel is against increasing energy efficiency and energy security. It's the most sensible thing of all. But if you're making the marker of it always what is precisely happening to carbon, A, you're not going to do it, and I'm sorry to say you're not actually going to do it, for a reason I'll just mention in a second. But also, the real issue is how are we going to have enough energy of all types, not just to keep the US going, but above all, from my point of view, for the developing world. That is, to me, absolutely crucial.
Good, let's talk about the developing world how you meet their energy needs.
How they meet their energy needs.
The developing world...
Peter Huber, let's hear from Peter Huber.
We know how they're meeting their energy needs. They are taking down the rainforests, they are soaking carbon out of their land, and they are burning coal. I mean, we actually know this. All this talk about externalities, if you don't know this, the Kyoto system divides the world. I didn't do this, they did it. They divide it into 20-80, okay? Everything on the 20, nothing on the 80. How can we even talk about externalities? If I said to you, folks, we're getting an externality system worked out for this group just right here, but it's only this group here. All the rest of you do what you like. What do you think would work with that system? Nothing would work.
Interesting and totally off the point of are major cuts in carbon worth the money. Take Afghanistan, where I work. You and I and the rest of American taxpayers this winter will spend something like $80 million buying diesel to run the North Kabul power plant, that diesel trucked over the Khyber Pass. If instead we enabled the Afghans by training, by technology transfer, to grow oil crops, take the oil and make it into biodiesel, they would have a viable industry, they would have jobs, and we would not be paying for the diesel to pollute the air in Kabul. Now, yes, this would be an expenditure of money. It would enhance national security for us, and if, in fact, we don't deliver genuine development to the Afghans, we will get our heads handed to us.
Great Speeches and Interviews is your source for in-depth information about the economy, foreign peace, climate change, and more. Now with more speeches and more interviews than the leading brand, also contains tasty tidbits of humor and song, fortified with more debates than the other brands, and all comparisons are fictional, broadcast on Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on KUBU 96.5 FM.
Lost my job, joined the army to get an education, and I most surely did. Wanted to have some kind of steady job, lead a decent life, support me and my wife and kid. First I was based in Texas, then it was off to Germany, then they sent us to Iraq. So many ruined buildings, so many burned up bodies, twisted railroad tracks. We were sent off to Fallujah, told to keep the peace amidst such hunger and despair. I was only 21, didn't have a clue what I was doing there. Now they say the war is over and I'm back at home, here in the land of the free. And you're looking at the face of victory, you're looking at the face of victory. Strolling through Fallujah, driving on the rubble, shattered pavement and shattered glass. They sent us on a search for weapons. We looked in every basement, never found a single barrel of gas. And when we saw the cities looted, as we watched the oil pipelines, it all began to seem so clear. We were fighting for Exxon, dying for Chevron, that's what we were doing here. They told us we'd be welcomed as troops of liberation. Once again they lied. We got shot at every day. Everywhere we went, a bunch of my buddies died. A rocket launcher hit my tank, started up a fire, blew my legs right off of me. Now you're looking at the face of victory. You're looking at the face of victory. I went back to Michigan, they put some plastic on my stumps and sent me on my way. Now I roll on down the city streets, looking at the people as they turn their eyes away. Down at the burn, they were talking about the government, how it's all a ruse. And I get a little madder every time I see the president smirking on the evening news. I think of how they duped me and so many more good people, and I think of the price we paid. The rich keep getting richer, and the bastards are already scheming about the next nation they want us to invade. Yeah, I keep on thinking about this situation. I think of Oklahoma City, and you're looking at the face of victory. You're looking at the face of victory. you're looking at the face of victory.
Now, back to the debate. Is reducing carbon emissions worth the cost?
What about the impact of biofuel development for this on the need, even greater need, to increase world food supply? You're taking land now increasingly for biofuels to increase world food supply. It is a competitive
choice. Only because
choice.
You're doing it stupidly and because
no.
we are subsidizing it.
No, no.
Yeah, we are...
You are subsidizing it, but in fact the seriousness all the way through from Malaysia, for example, to Indonesia, except the impact is potential. In fact, some people argue it is now one of the most serious pressures causing, in fact, a reduction in world food supply.
Look, I'm
at
not
a time
defend.
When we have
Bjorn,
to...
Bjorn Lomborg, let's have
well,
Bjorn.
I just want us to bring us back to having a conversation and Hunter was actually very good at that. We need to get back to business. This is not about who can come up with the smartest story or the most endearing, cute little tale. This is about how can we do this in the world. And the economists have done those studies, and they have shown that this has real and significant cost on the tor- of, you know, 1 to 3 or 4% of GDP.
But I think
the
you missed the difference
is,
between a cost and an investment.
Money? Well, but the problem is it's not an investment if it doesn't actually pay back more. And that's, of course, the whole question. Are we doing a lot of good for the world?
Adam, we're back against the motion, speaking against the motion.
I enjoy the conversation. I mean, 2-3 years ago, we were arguing about whether climate change was real. And now we've moved beyond that. Now the question is, should there be a carbon cap that seems to be the right place? Or should it just be investments in things that actually make bring down the cost of energy for everyone? Okay, well, I agree that we should be investing and bringing down the cost for everyone. Now, then the debate is, are major reductions in carbon necessary? Do we actually need a cap as well? Well, for the companies I work with and for governments, they actually want the rules set.
But Adam,
we've seen without an effective SEC, without an effective regulatory framework, people can invest and there's no guarantee for the investment.
But Adam, your side itself is proposing no cap on 80% of the world that currently generates 54% of the greenhouse gases.
This is the old Kyoto system, and I don't think any of us are supporting that.
John, could we just answer the word major? If I'm being quite honest about major, to influence climate in any way, you fundamentally would have to throw 4 billion people out of work. You'd have to keep every ounce of coal in the ground, every ounce of oil in the ground. And let's be absolutely frank, it isn't going to happen. Because the impact of anything less from changing your light bulbs to biofuels is absolutely non-existent on climate. And that's my point. If it were truly worth doing, the costs would be right. But it won't work on climate.
Now, Philip, I would really like to take you up on a point here, because I think that what we're seeing here, when we began, the introduction that was given was that you, your side, accepted the fundamental reality of climate change caused by greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, but all you've done is to deny it. No, both you
well, there,
and Bjorn, yes,
panel,
you, yes
there,
you have. There has been
a tendency to, I think, almost accuse the other side of intellectual dishonesty. Well, Philip, you used the term junk science. Adam, you accused Peter Huber of contempt. Bjorn, you accused Oliver Tickell of doom-mongering.
Absolutely, but I've been very nice.
Do you, in fact, Adam, do you think your other side, your opponent's arguments are intellectually dishonest?
Well, that's for them to decide in their consciences tonight. But
No, actually, it's a question to you.
But the question, I guess, I accused my opponent of contempt. And when someone says 5 billion poor people are the problem, and that was a direct quote from what he said, that is a contemptuous statement. Our jobs sent to their shores. That is a contemptuous statement. I think that is a fact.
Well, if anybody took a discussion of jobs as contempt, I truly apologize. I feel no contempt. I'm trying to talk about macroeconomic effects in a global economy. You know, many people feel there is a global economy and things do move like that. As for saying, you know, their fecundity has beaten our gluttony, I don't know which is ruder, to be, you know, gross and eat too much or to have lots of children, but I don't mean any contempt by it. I'm just saying it is an actual fact.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. The motion up for debate is, major reductions in carbon emissions are not worth the money. Stay with us.
I'd like to ask the folks who are arguing against the motion, what in a legal context or from an enforceability standpoint, would you expect that we can actually do about China, India, and the developing world?
Adam Warbeck.
Now, what type of constraints will be put on China? Well, China obviously is interested in that as well. And China, as it begins to invest in building these sort of renewable technologies, is going to be very interested in dealing with the air pollution, because in Chinese cities, they're very concerned about air pollution right now, and they know that comes from coal plants, and they're concerned about dealing with that. So they're highly motivated to reach the point of energy parity, or a place where everyone has enough energy, and then to ratchet down both the CO2 emissions, the air particulate matter emissions, and all those sorts of negative consequences that come from it.
Peter Huber, do you mind?
You know, there is no field of policy you will ever find, and I spent 25 years in watching this in Washington watching this, where you will find a greater gap between what people actually do and what they say they're going to do, want to do, should do, ought to do. The EU itself, the people who are most frantic about this and who signed this stuff, they're not, none of them or possibly one of them will meet their Kyoto commitments. You know, you just cannot take talk about what people are going to do for anything. China is, in fact, building coal plants like crazy. They say they're going to build more, but I couldn't care less what they say. They are actually doing it. They are the world's biggest emitter today. How can you ignore the world's biggest emitter?
Well, I mean, there's a few things to remember here, and surely one key thing is that a very large part of this coal that's being burnt in China is actually producing products for export to America and to the European
creating
Union.
Jobs.
And so your tax are plans, but not theirs, right?
And it's important to recognize that. Another thing, let's look at what China is actually doing. China is investing hugely in renewables. China's already got the world's biggest solar and photovoltaic industries. China is investing hugely in wind turbines. They are building more and more of the world's turbines and bringing the cost of turbines down. And yes, they may indeed be mining more coal, but much of that is surely displacing imports.
On the far side. Yeah, to my ear, those against the motion are not confronting the choices that are necessary. And it's been sort of a flagrantly anecdotal presentation. And I would suppose that, first of all, I want to say that Hunter actually said, whether she realizes it or not, during her presentation, that what they have in mind would require neither major changes in taxation or major changes in regulation. Now, if that's it, then why are we having the debate? And let's go on.
Is that your question?
I don't think that's my question. Is for anyone on that side to honestly address the real trade-offs that we're talking about, if we're talking about 1 or 2 or 3% of gross international product or whatever the other major changes are. If there aren't major trade-offs, then we shouldn't be having the debate. And I think they've been denying the trade-offs all throughout the debate.
Okay. Oliver Tickell, take that.
I have got to agree that there are trade-offs and that there are some aspects of moving to a low-carbon economy which actually produce a net gain, your negative costs, low-hanging fruit, but there are other areas where there are real costs, at least in the short term. The important thing is that as you progress from the short term through to the medium term, you find that the investments that you're making in renewable energy technology, for example, and in mass production, developing the engineering expertise to bring costs down, that actually over the medium term, these shift from being a cost to being a benefit. And the nature of that benefit is a lot more than just the carbon.
My fellow Americans, it is I, George W. Bush, and I've been laying low for a while, just laying low, keeping out of the public eye. It's been a time of refraction. Just a man alone with his thought. But things have been getting bad since I left. I mean, just recently, under President Obama's administration, the United States lost its AAA rating. That means millions of Americans could potentially be stranded on the side of the road with a flat tire. So that's why I'm coming back out of the non-public eye and talking about a fellow Texan who's running for president, Governor Rick Perry. I think he's swell. He's a nifty guy, and I think he's awesome. He's run for president, and as Texas governor, he has the record of all Texas governors for the most executions ever. And he did this, I'm proud to say, without the use of performance-enhancing drugs. Yeah. So I'm out here. I want to sing a little song about him, promoting for him, and I figure if I can help him out, maybe I can get him the electrical votes that he needs. We've been suffering Barack too long, hearing his same old song. We waited to see who from the GOP could lead us. But from Texas there came a new name. game. With Perry's halo in the ring, now it's a new game. His Reagan charm is sure to please us. Plus he's Facebook friends with Jesus. He's the man if you're just a little nostalgic for me.
Like a bushed corn cowboy, ooh, ooh, riding out on a horse like the host of a rodeo.
Texas homegrown cowboy,
more macho and right wing, it's like I am Bush 2.0.
He's like me,
but my mind isn't slow. Well, I really do like to campaign, wearing boots and I talk real plain.
But sometimes stay mute or you might stick a boot in your mouth.
Like I said, Texas should secede.
But that's okay, cause it's important in life to secede.
What if I need someone who's brainy?
We could always thaw out Janie.
Make him do the thinking while the lights keep shining on me.
Be a real lowbrow boy.
Get a NASCAR cap and start praying out in public more.
Better start right now, boy. Keep heading to the right and maybe people won't get sore
when they remember I work for Al Gore.
And now for something completely different.